encouraged, not burdened by the history that they create. They know what is expected of them. They are Manchester United.
Listeners to another episode of the Buzz Me Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams. The first part of this episode is going to be a short interview I did with former Manchester United player Louis Saha. It was a really cool opportunity. We only spoke for about 10 to 12 minutes or so, but it was fun. He gave some really good answers. And yeah, here it is.
Ça va bien.
That's about the extent of my French. So I'll first of all, thank you for your time. I just start things off, you know, this is a Manchester United podcast, so first question, what are some of your favorite memories as a Manchester United player?
I lived in the Champions League, obviously scoring my first goal, having this jersey every time I'm going to Old Trafford. There is so many memories. This club is such a special place for our sport in itself. So football mean a lot to me. So yes, when you mention Manchester United in my family, it's just a dream card. You know, it's like, wow. Mm-hmm. you can have bigger than that.
Yeah, is that sort of what keeps you connected to the club as well? I know you're always happy to go back whenever asked.
Yeah, definitely. The connection is very strong. Because one part of my, let's say, career, I was injured. I was challenged mentally by the kind of like desire to be part of this history and couldn't do it. So I was like really a challenge, and I always felt the support of the fan, of the manager, of the players. So even now, I had an experience not long ago. I was injured and I've seen again the same kind of protection and love. It's amazing. And I know for sure, like 100%, that no other clubs will have been taking care of me the way they've done it.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking at the present now, obviously Manchester United have struggled a lot over the last few years. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts, I guess, either positive or negative, going into this new season with Erik ten Hag in charge?
I like what I see. I like the kind of, yes, he's taking a lot of the pressure, like, putting the word out there, you want to compete, you know, to the best way possible in every department, you know, physically, technically. You want to win trophy. He wants to be fit. This is brilliant. So I really like that. And I've seen during games a lot of energy in the players, a lot of smiley faces. So all those things are good indication. And as well, I was not really happy in some way with a certain type of body language of previous managers in some way, where sometimes you feel like they were too calm. And I like that he's got that charisma that you know that he's going to snap if something not going to plan. There's something I think in terms of like growing and development is very important to have this kind of figure that's going to make you, let's say, unstable at time, stable most of the time. And this is very important. You need to have this kind of support, but as well, sometimes that fire. And I think that's what I've seen in the three games and as well a few conferences. I can see that the guy is very, yeah, he's a hard worker. You can see that. You can't have those kind of like answers on every question that we've been throwing at him. He's got a really big plan.
Well, you may have just answered my next question then. I was going to bring up, you know, you were part of these teams in the 2000s where you come in at a time where Manchester United, you know, they just won the league. They win the FA Cup your first season there, but it was still sort of a transition period between, you know, some of the team core that won the treble to the team that would go on to win the Champions League in 2008. And I was going to ask, you know, what are some of the key components that you saw in that team building process that you were a part of over the mid-2000s as you guys sort of figured out what your new identity was to challenge for titles?
That's exactly it. You know, it's like the kind of like guarantee that the manager always come as the figure that is really like very strong, but he's going to be really there when you need the support. But at the same time, you know, you could bring into a discussion a youngster, giving the credit that he deserves, and then like maybe challenge someone who won so many trophies and make him like understand that he needs to work harder or show a better example to others. And all those kind of like combos of things that you were doing was just like a way to gel the team. And it was as well the figure that was really hard to control. The press had no games on him. It was like above all the big press, and he would be taking the pressure on his shoulder. So we were very calm going into any games because we had our shield. It was those kind of combination. And I said, like the Cristiano development is an example. Yes, all the attention was on him, but other players as well inside was on him as well sometimes. But he managed to protect him and give him the kind of like freedom that he deserved, and the time to grow, and all those made the Cristiano that we have now. So it's an unbelievable achievement. It's the same with Wayne, with Darren Fletcher. All those players were immense for the trophy that we won during that time.
So are you confident then that, you know, seeing some of that from Erik ten Hag, you know, somebody who wants to be feared, somebody who wants to leave his mark on the game, and especially this club, are you confident that, you know, in the near future you can see this team starting to challenge for things again? I they've gotten close over the last couple of years, you know, just falling short in either semifinals or the Europa League final, but you know, with the setback of last year, there's some doubts in the minds now.
Yes, I think I'm more confident because what I've seen is all about those kind of like similarities between what I experienced, you know, about having like a very strong unit of rules that you see that you can't be bigger than those rules. You can't be bigger than the club. None of the word that he mentioned or the press conference that he's done indicate that he's going to let any player think that he's bigger than the club or maybe not just like saying this in this way, but that thing's going to be disrupted every weekend because one individuals or few individuals are not happy. No. That's not the things are important. You have to sacrifice the club in some way. The project in some way is bigger. And this is what I've seen. I've seen that there is a respect there. There is an establishment on the way they're going to play, indication that they all understood it. Whoever's going to come will have to gel on this and that's it. So it's very strong, what I've seen. But there is a moment where things not going to go well because the Premier League is not the Eredivisie, with all the respect that I have. So let's see what's gonna happen. But I'm confident that week in, week out, we will see a stronger side.
Okay. And Louis, once again, thank you for your time. I know you've got a busy schedule, so we'll make this the last one. What are some of the differences you notice in how forwards play in the game now, over, you know, maybe over the last few years compared to when you came through in the Premier League? Is it feels like almost the idea of what a goal scorer or a true number nine is almost gone in the game nowadays?
Completely, yeah, it's gone. It has been challenged. Now there is two, let's say, remain proper strikers in some way, where we have like Alan and then Robert Lewandowski. That's it. Those others are kind of similar. Nunez has come out, but it's very rare. Most of those players need to really understand how things work on the flank, you know, with their wingers or new wingers, but they are strikers because they score more goals than them now. You know, the Mana, the Salah, the Mane, the Salah used to be a great example, but the one before was Cristiano. At the time when we came back 10, 15 years ago, that was the first player who actually, you know, starting to score 20, 25 goals. It was the first one to do that. So we had changed. It's way more difficult to predict as a striker where you're going to get the goals. But yes, it could be at times very frustrating because you are not the main man. The wingers are now more important. They are more involved in the game. They touch more the balls. So proper striker now or a modern striker have to come closer to the midfield and having a like Benzema is doing it in some way. So it's more modern. I would think that you need to be able to go on the flank sometimes on the side and make yourself forgotten a little bit and just spot on a moment where you come back to the box. So it's a different way of playing, thanks to Guardiola maybe. Yes, it seems to be harder for defenders to defend against. So you can see more goals. There is as well the rules, you know, having the defenders not able to really defend crosses because now they have their two ends in the back all the time. It's a big plus for wingers. It's a big plus.
And there's eyes on them all the time now too, VAR as well. All right. Well, thank you so much, Louis, for your time.
Thank you.
And I hope you have a great the rest of your day. All right. We're back. Thank you for listening to the Louis Saha interview. I'm here now with the usual co-hosts, Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. How's it going, boys?
It's more enjoyable for me than watching you stumble through that intro.
This is why you write out scripts.
Yeah, well, I'm a...
What are you doing all day that you didn't have time to write out a script?
I was writing about Jadon Sancho. Actually, maybe we should talk about that. I don't know why I didn't think of that when I was thinking of ideas for this, but
writing about Jadon Sancho like last week. Come on, Colin, you're the head editor of the Busby Babe. This isn't a dig at you. This is literally your job.
Paul, are you just taking this opportunity to have like get to say that to somebody else this week?
My Paulie is so innocent.
My brain is so mush, and it's only Wednesday afternoon, which is a problem because last week we hit this point on like Thursday afternoon. So I was hoping at the very least it wouldn't happen again until Thursday afternoon. Maybe I can get till Friday, and it's hell yeah.
Yeah, it's a real lemon. It's Wednesday vibes today.
Yeah, I mean, I just took my first PTO in like 3 years, so I have no idea what to act now that I'm back.
Oh, yeah, how was Los Angeles?
Pretty difficult to watch preseason matches when you're even 3 hours more behind. So didn't catch that, but it was good. It was good. Cousin got married.
Wait, at a preseason match?
Yeah, I was on an airplane.
Oh, but that was at like 5:45 a.m. Yeah, like that one I skipped too. I was like, no.
Absolutely. No, it was cool though. Cousin got married. It's the first time I ever went to Los Angeles. So it was a good time. Ate a lot of tacos.
Meet anyone famous?
I met somebody who worked in the Rams front office. She was at my cousin's wedding, and she was showing off her Super Bowl ring. So that's the closest I got.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of ring chasers, I just got another update about Cristiano Ronaldo. So maybe we'll lead off with that topic instead of Frankie. Manchester United is number 7, pretty publicly does not want to play for Manchester United anymore. He has spent this summer training in Portugal while the rest of the squad went on the preseason tour. He is back at Carrington now, but is not really a full participant yet. He's back for meetings with the club.
He's not training.
Yeah, basically all reports are indicating he hasn't changed his mind. The problem, of course, is that none of the other clubs have changed their mind either. Nobody really wants him. And now Atletico Madrid, their president, publicly stating that he's not really an option. And their fans showing up to a preseason match saying they had a banner. I don't remember what it said.
CR7 not welcome.
Yeah, CR7 not welcome. And the fans releasing a statement asking the club not to sign Cristiano Ronaldo. So
if only we had done that last year.
Right.
Well, our fans were saying screw football I mean, I still remember the replies I got saying screw football, like, or screw numbers, screw tactics. Like, sometimes it's about the romanticism, and this is where romance gets you.
I can't count how many replies we got when the brand account tweeted out about it. Basically, all the replies just said, mate, it's Ronaldo.
Right.
Like, that was the only reason we needed to sign him.
That's the closest we ever got to dealing with, like, old-school football guys, like, American football guys. Like, we had a bunch of Mike Dickas in the replies going, like, screw your numbers. Like, this is a vibe signing, and then it was very much not a vibe signing.
It was a bad vibe signing.
It was a vibe signing. It was just a negative vibes signing. Yeah. And I think I would have been more open to this than you guys would have had we been signing 2014-15 Ronaldo, 32-year-old Ronaldo. I would have been like, he's 32, probably not a good long term, but hey, for 2-3 years he's still banging in 40 goals, like, why not? But like, this was 36-year-old Ronaldo,
with that Lewandowski then.
Yeah, right. Lewandowski's not the narcissist and egotistical player that Ronaldo was. Like, that's always, there's so many people who just never stopped worshiping Ronaldo. Like, I understand if you just start watching the sport and you're like, wow, that guy's amazing, and you fall in love with him and et cetera. But like, there were just so many United fans who go with the no one's bigger than the club mantra, and then when Ronaldo left, they like just still weren't. And like, I soured on Ronaldo at the end of the 2008 season when he publicly, basically on the pitch in Madrid, was like in Moscow, like, let me go to Real Madrid, and put out that article that where he called himself a slave, that United are treating me like a slave, and then watched him throughout the following season where he agreed to stay, but like just went through the motions. And it was like, this dude doesn't care about us. He's all about himself. And I never really followed him and supported him once he left. I just didn't care. I was like, all right, he was a great player. And none of that ever changed how I felt about him between 2004 and 2008. Still one of my favorite players to have ever watched that era of Ronaldo. The young winger with all the tricks and the flair, the player that morphed into this just ridiculous goal scorer in 2008. None of that ever changed. I'm like, you gotta be able to separate that with who Ronaldo is now. Like, bringing him back was never going to bring back that player. Letting him go to City or somewhere else, like, is not going to change your memories of the player he was the first 6 years he was here. And what's interesting is when you look at Atletico, is, are they saying no? Are the Atletico fans saying no to Ronaldo from a football perspective of no, like, we don't, you're not going to fit in at this team? Or is it a Real Madrid perspective of, we went to 2 Champions League finals and your ass beat us, and you were the tormentor of us for years and years and years. We don't want you here. The same way that, like, United fans would not have wanted a late career Steven Gerrard, even if he was a perfect fit for the midfield at that time. It's just no. And the other question, as Atletico comes out, as Atletico's president came out and just definitively said, no, like, we can't afford this dude, is me asking, were they ever even in for it? Or is this just Mendes pulling out the exact same tricks that he used last year, and he's trying to pull on that nostalgia of Real Madrid and be like, oh, you don't want your boy going across town and ruining his legacy and hoping that Real Madrid come and bail them out the way that, because hey, it worked last year, so why not try it again?
Yeah, I mean, the only club so far that reportedly had a deal in place, or any sort of deal in place with Jorge Mendes, was Chelsea, and they stopped that as soon as Tuchel said no. Which, like, I find that a little bit believable, just because it seems like Todd Bailey is kind of the guy who
wants to make a splash.
He wants to make an impact right off the bat. He wants to win over these fans that, you know, really came to value Roman Abramovich and, you know, his financial input in the club and the direction he took them. And Bayern Munich did the exact same thing where
I think the fans would be more welcoming at Chelsea to that because Ronaldo.
There's so many plastic fans anyway.
Yeah, but also he didn't like for what? Two of the years that he was at United, Chelsea won the title. They played in a cup final. Chelsea won. Like I don't think he scored that many goals against. Like he was not the tormentor of Chelsea. He did score in the Champions League final. That was a big deal. But like he scored, then they tied it up, and then we won on penalties. He missed his penalty. Like it was not the Ronaldo show that day. So I think for the banter of like, oh, we got United's golden boy is now wearing a Chelsea shirt. They would be more open.
And also the whole thing about that rivalry is that it was very of the moment where it was like. It was those squads specifically that really hated each other. It wasn't like, I mean, maybe it was a little bit like Arsenal, but it's definitely not like, you know, Liverpool or anything where it's something that just, okay, this team is our rival now. Like when we play, this is a rivalry game. I think we're far enough removed from that, that Chelsea fans really don't have like a sense of this guy was a rival of ours. Nathan, where would you like to see
Nathan, like an audible, it's like an airplane, like an audible yes, like nodding your head is going to help us.
I think Jorge Mendes needs to hit up whomstever is the biggest rival of Sporting CP.
FC Porto?
There you go.
Or would that be Benfica?
I don't know. Call them both.
Yeah,
no, I'm going to Lisbon in like a month, and the weekend I'm there, only Benfica play at home, and I just... So I keep him away from there.
All right.
Pauly, this is for the betterment of everybody, not just for you, bud.
Yeah, the price of the ticket's going to shoot up. And it'll be harder to
buy your ticket now.
So Scams on Twitter tried to manifest the idea of a Victor Osimhen sort of swap deal with Napoli. And apparently Napoli was also a club Jorge Mendes hit up, but
Mendes
that's a different...
Like, that's really all it is.
Yeah.
And the issue is that like Ronaldo's is willing to reduce his wages by 30%, which is a big number, really big number, until you realize that he's on £490,000 a week, and reducing that by 30% puts him at £350,000 a week. And it's like, oh, Mendes is going around begging teams to take on his client and be like, he's willing to play for you for only £350,000 a week, a 37-year-old who you're going to need to build everything around. And the other issue is that, as United saw and found out, is you can put Ronaldo in the team and be successful if you build the team properly around him. But if you have been building a team in one way all this time and then just stick Ronaldo in it, probably not going to work. And at this point, most teams, if they weren't planning on having a Cristiano Ronaldo, they weren't built around a Cristiano Ronaldo. So if you sign him now, then they just have to go and sign a ton of more players that would fit him, which would be even more expensive. And all the while, they're doing this at £350,000 a week for Ronaldo.
Or just risk the thing that United did last summer, which is turn your team into a Ronaldo team and watch the fallout happen.
Well, I mean, look, there's a reason that like Juventus weren't exactly in a brokenhearted to sell him. And
yeah. I think part of the reason there seems to be more of a positive energy from the squad right now is that they haven't had to deal with Ronaldo for the last couple of months.
That's what I think the real scope of the question is, because right from the start of this whole thing is when Ronaldo announced, like, I want to leave, and I said, cool. Maybe Chelsea will come in, but otherwise, I expect you to be playing for United this year because I don't see anybody else signing you, and that's how I'm still operating, is I just don't see him leaving. So the question is, how does he come back into the team where this team is really, they're thriving again, and there's so much optimism around this team, and somehow people haven't put two and two together. Like, hey, this team that was completely dysfunctional last year, and Harry Maguire has retained the captaincy, and oh, by the way, they all love each other again, so what's missing?
And Martial's getting buckets.
They're back at the levels that they were at 2 years ago, where the squad was very together and loved being around each other, and you could tell from the interviews they're really enjoying each other.
Well,
what's different?
Paulie, everyone's probably going like, well, now that Pogba's gone, everybody's playing cohesively now. So.
And,
but where's the golden parachute from Newcastle? Like, come on, guys.
They're not in the Champions League.
They're not in the Champions League, but also Newcastle have been low-key doing things very, very smart.
I know, it sucks. Like, I hate that. They're going to be so good.
They're going to be so good, not this year.
In like 5 years. Right now, they're buying all the like transition to being a good team players.
They're kind of doing what City did. And like what City did was very smart, is that they went, how do we take over the Premier League? They're like, well, we're not going to jump from 12th to 2nd. And so instead of jumping from 12th to 2nd, they went, let's jump from 12th to like the Europa League. And they just went and plucked players from Aston Villa and Everton. And they're like, we'll take your best players so you don't have them, make us better. And then from there, they went like, all right, like let's pluck players from Arsenal so like we can now jump into the Champions League. And then they went and started getting the extremely good players, like the Agüeros and everything from, and Yaya Toure's from around the world. And that's kind of what Newcastle are doing. I don't think it's going to be 5 years for them to be really good. I think it's going to be sooner.
All right. So next topic, obviously the Frankie de Jong transfer saga has dragged on.
Well, we're not done here yet.
We're not. I think that, what else do you have to say?
The issue is I'm going to find it interesting to see how he comes into the dressing room. I know everyone's going to be like, Erik ten Hag is going to have his fingerprints all over this and he's going to keep him in line. It's like, coaches don't really go in the dressing room. And it's going to be hard, especially because we talked about this on the last podcast with Carl, is that Paul Pogba was one of the few players that Ronaldo respected. And every time I hear that, I've heard that several times from several different people. One of the few players. The only player that I've ever heard by name has been Paul Pogba. I've heard several names of players that you would think he respects that he very much does not. And
it definitely doesn't seem like he respects. I mean, maybe like David De Gea, just because it seems like he's somebody who's been around a while and people just like him. But
I think he respects him after the goal he scored against him in the World Cup, where like De Gea basically let it go right through his hands.
Better respect Phil Jones.
I mean, like that's like Sweden's goalkeeper at the Women's Euros. Like you can't respect somebody after that.
Well, I mean, she probably wasn't expecting somebody to backheel something through their defender's legs and then through their legs.
Oh, Colin. Colin.
It was sick, though.
You can't concede a goal like that at a major tournament and then be like, I'm just going to go back to my country like nothing happened. Come on. How do you
do it? It's tough.
Come on. All right. Anyway, in all seriousness, that was the jokes aside. Pogba also had this. We heard the story with Maguire. He also told, Ronaldo did not treat the young players well, and he was very hard on them. And I think people are like, well, yeah, because those players are ways. It's, there is a difference now. Like, there is a difference now between how young players are now, how young players were 10 years ago, how young players were 20 years ago. That's just the reality of the world. And I think everybody sides with Ronaldo because they're like, look at him and look at his work ethic. They'll never become like that if they're with the work ethic that they currently have. And it's like, yeah, no kidding. Cristiano Ronaldo, you're never going to have another one. Like, no one's going to become Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, the whole thing about Ronaldo, and this is what Ronaldo, I think, doesn't quite grasp. Because to him, when he sees the young players not working as hard as he works, it's like lazy and it's a poor work ethic on their part. And he's like, how could they not be trying to do the things that how can they not be working as hard as me? Don't they want to get this? And it's,
don't they want to be me?
Right. Like, so like what Ronaldo doesn't fully grasp is that how easy things come to him because he's so talented. Ronaldo has more natural, like that naturally talented people a lot of times struggle with this. Like Wayne Gretzky was a terrible hockey coach because everything came so naturally to him that it's hard to teach that and really connect with players where it doesn't come as naturally. And for Ronaldo, like, to think, like, how could they not want to be me? And it's like, a lot of players don't. Ronaldo wants to be the very best in the world at everything. And for a lot of players, it's, I want to make it into my national team. I want to win the World Cup. I want to win this. Like, I want to be a contributor on this team. I'd rather score 17 goals and win the Champions League than score 22 goals and go out in the quarterfinal. And
I mean, this is the whole reason he's in the situation he's in, is because he wants to go to another team where he can add to that Champions League goal record.
Yeah, and, like, and people will side with him because they'll be like, he's Ronaldo. He's like, look at where he is. And it's just, Ronaldo is more naturally talented than 99.95% of footballers. He also works harder than 99.95% of footballers. And there's so many players that are so, like, somewhere in the middle. There's the 98th percentile of talent. Not all of them have the work ethic to be at the top level. There are players that have the work ethic. Scott McTominay works incredibly hard, does not have the talent. And, like, no matter how hard he works, he's not going to ever become the top midfielder in football. Like, the absolute marriage of work ethic and talent is once in a generation. And what skews our mind about that is that we had two at the exact same time. But you're never going to get another Ronaldo or a Messi. And I think, like, people just think if they're not working as hard as Ronaldo, they won't get there. And it's like, they're not going to get there anyway. And how many people work harder than they should, especially now with all the science and the doctors that we have that are probably telling these kids, take it easy. Like, how many players worked harder than the doctors told them that they should, and then tore up their knee and have no career? We don't know, because we never hear about those players.
Or they're Mike Trout.
Yeah, like, it's just, Pogba had to tell him, like, go easier on the young players. And, like, yeah, they never will become Ronaldo because they're not working hard enough, but they're never going to become Ronaldo anyway. Like, we just have to let them develop. Like, some of them are going to miss out because of the work ethic. Some of them are going to miss out because they're just not talented enough, regardless of how hard they work. Or
if they do have that sort of, like, peak where they have a season where they can score 30 goals, you know, they're going to be there for maybe two seasons.
Right.
This is an anomaly that we have these players who can go a decade and score 40 plus goals every year and win the Champions League. Look at the players before them. There was Ronaldinho. He was at the top for 3 years. You know, Ronaldo, the Brazilian Ronaldo, R9, like, he only really had his shot at the Champions League for, like, what, 4 or 5 years in some of those teams.
Do you think Phil Neville had a good career? Do you think he's happy with his career? I think his career was fine.
Yeah, I think he's happy with his career. I think he's not happy with his coaching career.
Yeah,
that's tough.
He played a bunch of years at Manchester United. He won a bunch of Premier League titles. He won the Champions League. He won a treble. I think he's happy with that. And I think he worked very hard to get to that level, and that was the level he was comfortable at. Like, to Ronaldo, it's unfathomable to him that someone, like, isn't trying to be the very, very best.
Like,
because
no one
ever
was.
That's how narrowly focused his mind is. And that's why he got to the level that he got to. But that becomes an issue now in the dressing room if there's nobody to keep him in check.
Yeah, it's, I think that also kind of factors into what just seems like a disregard on his part for anything that's not within his set of goals, which makes you not a good player for a team right now that has a new manager and is trying to rebuild off of a truly horrible season. All right. Are we ready to move on now?
Permission granted.
I do have a solution for the Champions League part.
Okay.
Yeah. He could just.
So just to clarify, we're not ready to move on.
He could just go to LAFC. They win. And then he plays in the CONCACAF Champions League.
And look, Here's the little point that he's missing. If you win the CONCACAF Champions League, then you go to the same Club World Cup that the European Champions League team plays.
That's what it's all about, baby.
That's the pinnacle trophy.
Also, you don't get to go to the European Super Cup.
Surely he'd be one of the first players to ever win the Champions League and the CONCACAF Champions League. Like, I mean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think there is another, right?
I think there was one recently.
Maybe like Rafa Marquez. I feel like he might be the only candidate I can think of.
You have to think that there's someone who was like a squad player, won the Champions League and then went to Liga MX and was like a squad player on the team that won the Champions League down there. Mm-hmm. You know, similar to that stat that, like, there was, like, someone from, like, the 2007 Stoke team in, like, every Champions League final. Like, stuff like
that. Yeah. All right. I'm gonna move the conversation on now. So, Frankie de Jong, we're at a situation now where Barcelona have asked him to have his wages, as in, like, cut them in half and just earn half of what was agreed to previously. And that's not even accounting for the deferred wages, which he is expecting to be paid at some point, that they would ask him to just opt out of if he did transfer. Or maybe not even opt out of. They would probably just refuse to pay them. And there's also the question now that, you know, there was a report from the Athletic's La Liga reporter that he doesn't have that special of a relationship with Erik ten Hag. And that's not really a big factor in his decision over whether, you know, to leave or not. And Paul, you said this before and in a discussion this morning with Suede, you know, this is a player who's not at a club where moving to Manchester United would be a step up. This is a player who's at the club he has always dreamed of playing for already. And he's in a really difficult situation where he's thinking about a million other things than playing for Manchester United in the first place, which is why it just kind of makes this all the more frustrating that he is a player who is so central to Erik ten Hag's plans going forward at Manchester United. And there's not even really that much hope right now that he's going to come to Manchester United.
Yeah, there's so many factors at play here. Trying to find this article because there's another article, from The Athletic about why it wouldn't be a surprise if Frankie de Jong just stuck it out. And that's the thing, is it's frustrating on so many ends of, as Colin said, he's so central to Ten Hag's plans. And that's why they're not moving on to a backup. And what Suede was saying this morning was there is no backup to Frankie de Jong. He is the guy, the way that Jurgen Klopp had Virgil van Dijk or nobody. And the way that Pep was like at Bayern, you're bringing me Thiago, or we're going to find somebody from the lower division. He was like, because there's nobody else like him. And that's frustrating. The other frustrating part is, Virgil van Dijk wanted to go to Liverpool. Thiago wanted to go to Bayern. We don't know if Frankie de Jong wants to come to United. He might. He might not. He might have to be saying all this stuff, because if he does say, yeah, sure, I actually want to go to United, then he loses the leverage he has when it comes to his wages. But United need more than Frankie de Jong. Like, they need another midfielder. Like, they need a backup to de Jong anyway. If just in case someone gets hurt, they have such a little depth in their midfield that it's like, just go and sign someone. And they're not doing that. And it just makes us feel short. And I know people say, like, oh, they'll use Eriksen deeper. And it's like, Eriksen's 31. We don't know how he's going to handle playing deeper in the Premier League at a Manchester United side. How he'll handle playing the level that United need him to play at. They Donny van de Beek is complicated still. He has played minutes this year in the second team in the preseason as the number 10. And he has gone into midfield when playing with the first team in a deeper role. And he had that bright moment on Rashford's goal. But that like wasn't that came from a transition. That came from a quick counterattack. Long ball, Martial brought it down. They got he hasn't stood out in midfield. That makes you say, oh, he's going to be able to do this in the Premier League, where we've seen him not be able to do it for 2 years. They need more. So like there's frustrating parts on every side. But then when it just comes to De Jong, the question is, does he want to come? Because like Colin said, he is playing for his dream team. Dutch players, ever since Johan Cruyff went to Barcelona, Dutch players grow up idolizing Barcelona. And like that's the team, the same way that if Colin, Nathan, or I were young footballers, like our dream would be to play for Manchester United. That's the team that we've been watching all our lives. That's the team that we grew up, that's our dream. That if Barcelona were interested in us and United weren't, we'd go to Barcelona. And then if 2 years later United called, we'd be like, yeah, that's where I want to go. He's at the club that he's dreamed of playing in. He made a big move there. That he is also, and The Athletic wrote this article about how, yeah, Barcelona have been very publicly saying, we need to sell you and you're not part of our plans. In their first two preseason matches, Xavi played seven different players in the three midfield spots. None of them were Frankie de Jong. He played him as a center back, which was kind of his way of being like, we're working on a midfield without you. But there have been players, Ousmane Dembele, Samuel Umtiti, and some other players that Barcelona have very publicly been like, we're getting rid of you. And what happens is they survive that transfer window. They go, no, I'm here. I'm happy. I'm going to stay. They survive that transfer window, and then they play themselves back into the team. So Frankie de Jong has looked around that dressing room and said, they've done this before, so if I want to stay here, I'm going to stay.
But he might have to cross that picket line.
Yeah, he would have to ultimately take he would have to ultimately take less money. But at the same time, like this Xavi playing him is basically Xavi playing both sides of this also. He is publicly saying, oh, you know, what's best for the club is that we generate a lot of money for selling you. He is not playing him in midfield. He's basically saying publicly, we're building life without you. But they took him on tour. They could have left him home. And not only did they take him on tour, they're playing him at center back. They're playing him at center back, but that's, hey, we need to get you some minutes because Xavi knows if you're still here in September, you're a very useful player to me, and I need to make sure you're ready.
Why is Xavi treating Frankie de Jong like we should be treating Scott McTominay?
That would have been a good question to pop into the Slack channel this morning.
I couldn't read through all 300 of them. You know, I had to get ready for work, so I missed it.
But what are your thoughts on the Frankie de Jong situation, Nathan?
I'm not going to lie, man. The vibes are not great. If I were to check the vibesometer. You know, first of all, it's sus that he's pretty anti-labor at this point. I don't love that. The fact that he is willing to stick with an employer that is actively trying to not give him the amount of money that he negotiated.
That has already replaced his financials, and his move could really fuck up that situation for them, and they're putting all this pressure on him anyway.
It's concerning. I don't like how any of that's being dealt with.
Stick it to him. I mean, that would be so funny, though.
Yeah.
Would be funny. Because, look, they're operating as if, like, the rules don't apply to them. And, like, they're just like, oh, we'll do what we want. And they went on – they had a member of the board go on TV in January, January 2021, to say that Ousmane Dembele had no future there. And he's still around. Like, there's plenty of players in that dressing room that the board has made very clear. Gerard Pique, Jordi Alba. Like, the board has made clear your future is elsewhere, and they're still here. So he's just like, why do I have to be the one to leave?
I vibes aren't good. Because as we saw in the Dembele case, he did take less money and he extended his contract. And I don't know. I would like to see the way that Barcelona is recklessly spending money after, you know, we're only 2 years removed from them crying poor and how they needed the Super League to basically bail themselves out.
They need the Super League so badly.
Yeah, I mean, they still need the Super League. They probably need it more than they did in May 2020. And it's like the way that they're operating right now is like way worse than, you know, a gambling addict. And so I'd like to see one Frankie de Jong stick it to him, because at this point it's messing with our business. And as Carl kind of pointed out on the last pod as well, you know, you'd like to see Barcelona beat us in a Champions League final. Like, you know, it's time for you to take an L.
I mean, this is like part of it for me though. Like, I mean, I would love for Frankie de Jong to come into Manchester United. Obviously, he's a great player. He's central to Ten Hag's plans. If he is the one that gets this project going, that's perfect. But I also really want him to have this fire in him that if we're in the Champions League next year, he wants that Barcelona draw, you know? And it just doesn't seem like, even if this happens, he's going to want that. It seems like he is still so
It's a very passive situation.
You're saying you want, like, you bring up the Champions League final and it's time for Barcelona to take an L. And the question is, how much are you willing to spite yourself for Barcelona to take that L? Because Barcelona take a huge L if they can't move Frankie de Jong. If Frankie de Jong doesn't leave. And, like, the funny thing is, like, as Nathan said, like, we saw them for 2 years crying poor. They're not crying poor this year. They're crying business as usual. Yeah. And it's just a matter of the rules and La Liga's rules being like, well, actually, you can't do that. And that's so, like, when they should be active, if they're going to activate these levers, it's like pay off your debt so that you can. Yeah. And instead, they're just like, they're basically like, because the way
their debt has like tripled over the last 5 years.
Because the way, like, all right, quick transfer accounting lesson here, very basic from someone who only has a rudimentary.
We gotta get your father-in-law.
There's also a Tifo video on this if you want to watch.
Understanding that. Of this is when you sell a player. If you sell a player for 100 million, you report that income as 100 million came in this year. But now, if you buy a player for 100 million and you sign to a 5-year contract, that gets reported as 20 million a year. So if they sell De Jong for 65 million, it's not just, oh, you signed one 65 million pound or euro guy to replace him. It's like, you could sign, what they'll do is they'll go ahead and they'll sign five guys, because it's like they signed five guys that add up to 65 million. Only now you got to pay that next year on top of the ones you're paying for last year. So, like, next year they have to find a new 65 way to find that 65 million. So it's just like you activate these economic levers, pay off your debt. Instead, they're just like, oh, we got an influx of 180 million. How can we spend that right now in a way that's also going to make us have to pay for it next year, where we don't have this economic, where we don't have this boost to our books? I'm like, and that's kind of why, like, they're trying to sell Memphis Depay, and I'm like, they're probably going to try to sell Rafinha in 2 years. Like, they're now operating at this high stakes of, like, we signed a guy, now we need to sell a guy for big money. And, like, some of the guys that they signed, yeah, the Griezmann thing, Griezmann, Dembele, Coutinho, that's going to put them into huge debt. That's really where their issues.
And they keep really signing guys that are going to have no sell-on value. Like, Christensen's not going to have sell-on value.
They sold Neymar for 200 something million and immediately went into debt with that.
I want revenge on Barcelona as well. I want Manchester United. You know how much egg.
So, like, that's the thing.
I want Manchester United to be the ones dealing it, though.
But the whole thing is that if you sell De Jong, like, you can let them survive another year where they actually might have a team good enough to go and win. And United will just be in the Europa League. Whereas, look, I want United to land De Jong too, but, like, you got to be able to see the comedy in this, in that if De Jong doesn't leave, they have egg on their face because, oh, well, we signed Robert Lewandowski and we signed Rafinha and we signed all these guys. None of them could play, though.
I wonder how much longer this has to go until, I don't know if it would go to, because this is obviously different than what we're dealing with as far as international law is concerned. Like if he needs to go to the court of arbitration of sport for any kind of contract disputes, if it's just in Spanish court, which, you know, they love to collect taxes over there. So
this was also brought up in the Slack. It's a question of like, did he sign a new contract?
Yeah.
And it's reported that he did. And if he signed a new contract that deferred all that money, then Barcelona aren't doing anything wrong. He gave up that money until now, and Barcelona are trying to sell him before they owe it to him, which, okay. But he needs to agree to break that contract. That's the only leverage he has is that I'm under contract until whenever year it is. If Barcelona could sell his registration, but they can't do that unless Frankie de Jong is also willing to break his contract.
I guess the only credit in the situation that I might extend to Manchester United's way is they have not gotten baited into the, well, we'll cover the deferred wages.
Not yet.
If that happens, I think that's a real problem.
It's a real problem.
That's
what Barcelona's waiting on.
Yeah, that's one of those situations where it's like, we really didn't have another person waiting in the wings. That's when I would think, all right, how desperate was the situation that, like...
And the question is how much does he want to... Like, we're all coming from it from a money standpoint and saying he doesn't want... Or he's owed this money and he wants his money and absolutely should. He should get every penny that they owe to him.
Get your money, player.
But... what I think is interesting is that Athletic article looks at it from a different way of like, what if he really just wants to stay at Barcelona? What if he really enjoys it there? And he's looking around at all of his teammates who have been in similar situations. And the club has said, we're done with you. And he's like, no, like they're still here. So I'm going to still be here. And then perhaps maybe he does agree to a wage cut. And agrees to something. And we're all sitting there. We'd be sitting here aghast at that. But maybe that amount of money or forgoing that amount of money for him is worth it to continue to play at the club that he dreamed of playing at.
I hear Barcelona is very nice. So, like, I get it.
It's a nice town. They got some views.
Yeah. They have beaches. They have weather.
They don't finish building their churches, but they still look okay.
We went on a tour. They told us that it was going to be finished. And I was like, yeah, see, here's the thing. Like, I'm pretty sure the tourist attraction is the fact that this church has been under construction for 100 years. If you finish it, you kind of lose the main draw.
What are you going to say to something, Nathan?
No, it's just vibes are weird, man. The vibes are weird. I what is concerning about the Frankie de Jong situation, obviously I've got my concerns over the idea that we blink and we say, all right, we'll cover those wages, because that's one money that we shouldn't have to spend, that's money we shouldn't spend, and it makes me concerned that, like, is the whole Ten Hag project really being steadied that much by the idea of, like, bringing in Frankie de Jong? Like, we haven't really seen, now that we've kind of signed, you know, Martinez and Eriksen, we're not seeing a whole lot of other links right now. It's certainly not to other positions. It's like Frankie de Jong apparently is the domino that has to fall before we pick anybody else up. Which,
it's like him and Antony.
Yeah, I think it's really weird that unless we're really working very well in silence, like it goes back to the, I think it's a bit at this point in this podcast, like surely there is a French midfielder in the mid-table of Ligue 1 who comes in and he's like transformative at Manchester United. Like, where are those guys at? Like, why haven't we, you know, Casey Evans, friend of the pod, has like a different French midfielder that he's tweeting about, I think, every single day, where it's like, this guy makes sense and he would cost us 15 million, not 80 and potentially deferred wages.
Today it was Benjamin Šeško, who we have been linked with, but seems to be very expensive. I think like 60 million range.
And like, I don't expect to hear the plan, because I like the idea of us just like doing our business and getting it done and not having sagas like what we're in right now, but we're not getting inklings, you know, that there is other things in the works. And that part is weird. And that's why I asked the question of Carl in the last pod, like, you know, how much do you does like Ten Hag potentially favor that these youth players that were not potentially in for some mid-table Premier League midfielder or a decent Serie A midfielder, a decent Ligue 1 midfielder? Like, surely there is somebody else on his list that goes, all right, maybe he's not Frankie De Jong, but he does like 75% of what De Jong does, or he does 2/3 of what De Jong does, and I can then pair it with somebody else. Because as we continue to say too, we need bodies. Like, it's not just Frankie De Jong fixes everything in the same way Pogba didn't fix everything. We got to get Frankie De Jong and somebody. We got to get Frankie De Jong and then that person and then another person. So, like, where are those other people at?
So yeah. One of the things he did say at his press conference was he said when he spoke about Frankie De Jong, or just the profile is so specific, and he said if we can't get that, like, we'll try to make somebody out of it, like, with essentially, I'm paraphrasing, we'll try to make one from what we have. And it wasn't so much like we're going to take Fred or McTominay or Eriksen or somebody that we had. It was more of like a youth player, like the same way that Pep at Bayern said, look, if we don't get Thiago, we're going to go into the Bundesliga 2 and grab a player from there. We're not going to go for a big name. So it's, if he does, if he thinks Zidane Iqbal can do that, then yeah, go for it and fully commit to, but fully commit to that. If there are bumps along the way, if he's struggling in August and September, you got to fully commit to that. And then I think maybe it can be better. And this is one of the other things of when people keep throwing out transfer ideas and I'm like, why wouldn't you, or why, you know, it came up a lot with the Raheem Sterling thing, is assess where you are right now and figure out where you want to be and figure out what this year is. And this year you are not a title contender. And every decision that you make does not have to be under the question of, does this make us better in 2022-23? It has to be from the question of, does this make us better in 2023, in 2024, in 2025? And if the answer is yes, then it's a good move. So if Zidane Iqbal, if you don't get Frankie De Jong and Erik ten Hag goes, I can turn Zidane Iqbal or Charlie Savage into the player that I need, it's going to take a year, but we're going to stick it out, and that means the ceiling for this team is sixth place. That then fine, go finish sixth. If that means that next year you've got a 20-year-old who's really ready to go, and suddenly the floor of your team has gotten a lot higher.
Yeah, all of a sudden we have our Pedri.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then that's fine, and go with it, and stick with it. And I would, is as long as it's going to, and look, it could be that that's his plan. It could be that he believes that Zidane Iqbal or Charlie Savage can do that, and then you give them a year and they can't. And like, that happens. That's player development. But part of me is also just like, part of me understands there's no backup for Erik ten Hag, for Frankie De Jong, because that is the rock that Ten Hag wants to build around. And the other part of me is like, well, you built Frankie De Jong from nothing, and now he's not available. But like, show how good you are. Be like, fine, I don't need the guy playing at the mega club. I'm going to build another one. That's, you know, like, as I said to Suede, like, Thiago's not a perfect example for Pep, because he did play a bit at Barcelona, but he had been playing for a year. Pep left. His playing time went down. He was ready to leave. But like, Pep's team at Barcelona was built around Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets. When he went to Bayern, he didn't say, give me that, give me one of those guys. He said, give me the guy behind them. He'll want to leave. He'll be, and I'm also looking for something somewhat different, but I'm going to make him what I need him to be. And then when he went to City, he didn't say, hey, get me the Barcelona guys or get me the Bayern guys. He said, give me this guy. Get me, you know, there was a whole like, wait, he has Yaya Toure again. And he didn't like Yaya Toure the first time. And he said, well, watch, I'm going to actually use Yaya Toure really effectively for a year or two before getting rid of him. Erik ten Hag, like, go and if you can't get Frankie De Jong, make another one.
I like that energy. There was a report today that the club don't plan on sending Zdeněk Ball or James Garner out on loan. So
that's good. They shouldn't.
Yeah.
That was a Slack nice conversation from yesterday. The loan system doesn't work. Don't be sending your guys on loan. Right. If you're sending them on loan, it's because you're trying to find a sale, and we should be doing better than that. Alvaro Fernandez to Preston, get out of here. Like, that's going to do no one any good.
Except Preston,
maybe. Yeah.
Maybe or maybe not. Like, so the whole thing is that, like, I don't want to get into this now. We don't have a lot of time, but the whole issue is that the managerial lifespan is so short now that if you can't make that, like, there's no incentive for Preston to develop this guy any for Manchester United. So the only way Alvaro Fernandez is getting into that team is if he is better right now than the left back that they have. And if he can help the manager win games, he'll play. And if he can't help the manager win games, he won't. And if he can play, then you're asking the same questions next year of, well, is he ready for the Premier League? I don't know, because he played at Preston.
Yep. All right. We're going to wrap things up there. Thanks for listening. Next week, we'll be back to preview the Premier League season.
Jesus Christ.
Shit.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see you next time.